Good evening, everyone. Welcome to tonight's Joe and Joe Weather Show. On this Monday, the 20th of September, 2021, the Joe and Joe Weather Show brought to you by Wholesale Holiday Lighting by Giannini, your complete holiday lighting specialist, meeting all your decorating needs. And if you are a contractor, well, where is it? Whoa, that's not supposed to happen. This is really weird. Okay, so we've got Wholesale Holiday Lighting by Giannini, your complete holiday lighting specialist, meeting all your decorating needs at 162 Ocean Avenue in Lindenhurst, New York. And the telephone number there is 631-957-5106. They're getting ready for Halloween and for Christmas. So if you are interested in having your home decorated, or maybe you want to do this as a business, give them a call or go to the website, liholidaylighting.com. And this is what I was looking for. If you are a contractor, this is your business, or you want this to be part of your business, they are having a holiday lighting open house free event on Tuesday, October the 5th, between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. And you can RSVP either by calling them at that phone number, 631-957-5106, or go to the website, which is liholidaylighting.com. And also brought to you by Omni True Value Hardware at 1226 North Wellwood Avenue in West Babylon, New York, 631-756-1125. They've got the best prices in town when it comes to everything, including salt, which is going to be in short supply this year. So give Omni a call or go to their website, which is omnitruevalue.com. I have no idea where Joe Rayo is. So this is kind of odd, because he's usually, even on days where he's a minute or two late, he's usually no more than a minute or two late. So, all right. Well, if he comes in, I'll know, and I will let him in. So in the meantime, I will carry this by myself. So I hope everybody had a great weekend. The weather here where I am has been actually fairly miserable most of the time over the last few days. I mean, the upside is that temperatures barely make it to 70 degrees in the afternoon. We've had on and off rain, nothing especially heavy. But you know, if you want to plan to do something outdoors, guess what? You got a problem, because stuff just seems to pop up. There was some patchy rain. A lot of this is leftover stuff from Nicholas, which is still around in parts of the Deep South and into the Ohio Valley. In the meantime, another lovely day in the Northeast, down into the Mid-Atlantic states, the northern Mid-Atlantic states at least, but we're watching that moisture out to the west, and watching a cold front that's going to be approaching for the middle and latter part of this week. We have two tropical storms out there, Peter and Rose. The only thing about Peter is the fact that it's indirectly impacting the speed at which the next cold front will be coming through later this week. If it holds together, it'll actually slow it down somewhat. And we mentioned that yesterday. Rose is way out in the tropical Atlantic. It's already moving north-northwest. It's likely not to survive much more than the next day or two or three. And then we'll start to see that disappear. We also have a new tropical wave that's moving off the African coast. It's actually quite impressive. And while conditions are not favorable at all for Rose, but when it gets up to about 20 degrees north, go 600 miles to the south, and conditions there are going to be favorable. And I think this tropical wave that's coming off is going to become a tropical depression or a tropical storm later on this week. And some of the models are hinting that it gets stronger than that, maybe even gets to hurricane status at some point. We shall see. Meanwhile, let me let him in. He is knocking at the door. Here he comes. Hi there.
Are you there? Yes.
Yes.
Had to reboot the computer. We had technical difficulties.
Right. We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
I was
just telling everybody, Joe, that, you know, we're going to be covering a whole bunch of things tonight, weather-wise, and we are also, of course, going to be talking about the action that's happening in the tropics. And hang on one second while I get my little map here. But, you know, everybody really is going to be pretty interested in, come on. Why am I having, you know, I'm having some issues tonight, Mr. Rayo. So just hang on one second. If you would bear with
me. We're all
me.
Having issues all of a sudden tonight.
Oh, this is crazy. Yeah. All right, you know what? I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to move us off. I'm going to go here. Okay. Nope. I got to get that out. Let me move us back in. See where you get, you know, I had it all planned out how to work this open tonight, and now I'm all semi disheveled. Now, let's see. Why am I not able to see what I want to see? Oh, finally. Good Lord. So, I mentioned to everyone, folks, if you look at your screen, that we're going to be talking about Tropical Storms Peter and Tropical Storm Rose. And I would bet that both of these storms will probably not survive. What do you think, Joe?
Oh, my goodness. I don't think that Peter or Rose will survive either. I think that we'll find out very quickly that Rose actually was caught gambling on whether or not Odette was going to survive and lost out and was discovered by the National Hurricane Center and has now been banished for life.
Well, so, if the next when the next tropical wave develops later this week, Sam the Butcher will come to the rescue. I don't know how much he was selling chicken livers there, as the sign says in the background. I'm thinking it's a six over there, but the 69 cents a pound. Chicken whole or part. So anyhow.
You know, also that Sam, the actor who played Sam, I think that's Alan Melvin.
Yes.
And he also played Alice's boyfriend on the Brady Bunch. He also played Charlie Hacker, Sergeant Hacker, in Gomer Pyle. He was also in the Phil Silver Show, going back into the late 1950s. So he's had quite a career.
Wasn't he also on Archie Bunker's Place?
Barney Hefner. Archie's next door neighbor.
Right. So there you go. So I don't know. I just sort of I saw that. Somebody sent that to me yesterday, and I got a good chuckle out of that with the Pete Rose thing. And then I was sitting here thinking, yeah, you know, the next name is Sam, so who else but Sam the Butcher? All right.
That's right.
I trust your day was okay. Otherwise, weather was a lot better up your way than it was down mine.
Well, Joe, basically, I had problems falling asleep last night. I don't know why.
Oh, I did too.
Didn't really fall asleep until.
So did I.
We're like, I didn't fall asleep until a little before 4 a.m.
Oh, I wasn't that bad. No, I actually was exhausted last night. I went to bed at 9, and then there was a beeping sound on my. No, that was the night before was the beeping sound. Anyway, I even got a glass of wine before I went to bed. I woke up at 11:30, wide awake. It's the world's worst feeling. I tossed and turned. I watched a little television. Then I finally went back about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then I fell asleep. And I slept all the way till 6 a.m. this morning.
Well, I didn't get to bed, or I didn't fall asleep completely until before 4 a.m. And then at 7:50 this morning, the phone rings, and it's this gentleman who we have who does our trees. We have him come over like every year or two to either, you know, cut down a dead tree that might be on our property. Today, he calls at 7:50. We've been trying to get him over here for weeks and weeks and weeks, And then finally, he says, I'm all set to go. I'm all set and ready to come. And Renata said, okay, give us a chance. We'll be up at 8:30. And like 5 minutes later, we hear the guy in our driveway. And he's got his men all set to go. And I hope we didn't make a mistake. On the side of my house, we had a thick cloak, if you will, of sumac and kudzu. And beyond where the kudzu and the sumac were is a hill, a very inclined hill of dirt. And back in 2011, when we had Hurricane Irene pass by and dump about a foot of rain, the rain fell on the dirt. The dirt, it literally was like a miniature landslide of mud on the side of my house. And we haven't had that in years since. Why? Because the kudzu and the sumac, the trees, have made a barrier to hold back any water or hold back any mud. All of that is gone now. I couldn't believe it. He just erased everything. It looks a lot cleaner now than it was, a lot better than it was, you know, like we had a jungle on the side of the house.
Right.
But now I'm concerned about the next go around with heavy rain. You know, anything over 4 or 5 inches, like what we had for Ida, that's going to spell problems for me. So, and now I'm looking ahead to Thursday, this sharp weather front approaching, and I do hope we don't have any excessive rain with that.
Well, you know, one of the things that I noticed, at least from the standpoint of what the models have been handling that the last several days, they can't seem to figure out the speed and the timing in terms of when it gets here and when it leaves. And I think part of the issue, a big part of the issue, is Tropical Storm Peter out at, you know, wherever it's going to be, 65, 66 or 67 west and moving northward. If it's out there, then that kind of reinforces the ridge between it and the coast, so the front slows down. If it weakens and gets sheared apart and disappears, then the ridge isn't as strong and the front can move through a little bit faster. And I think the, you know, models, I think, have been having a really tough time figuring out, is it there? Is it going to be there? Is it not going to be there? And I'm actually kind of surprised because the shear has been pretty strong. Southwesterly shear of like 30, 40 knots, and it's still holding together somehow. So maybe the verdict here is that the storm will hold together and the front will move slower. And that means the rain takes longer to get here, but when it does, it takes longer to get out.
And I'm seeing here at the Globe Traveler on the chat board says, Joe, plant oats. That'll hold the soil over the water, over the winter. Well, I don't know. it's a little bit late in the season. And I don't know whether or not it would be worth planting oats, but it'll be interesting to see what happens just in the coming days ahead with, again, as Joe mentioned, the uncertainties about the timing and the strength of this approaching cold front, whether or not we do indeed get a hefty amount of rain or maybe just some scattered showers, something that we'll have to deal with over the next day or two in trying to figure this out.
Mr. Big New Jersey says he's still frightened, and I don't see any context. So moderators, troll alert, just in case, so just pay attention. Anyway, here we go. Let's...
Mr. Big.
Yes.
Remember Mr. Big on Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Yes, exactly. Also on Sex and the City. All right, so yes. Here is here on the loop tonight. You know, there's a lot of tropical moisture. You know, this Nicholas stuff just really. Sometimes I think you're just better off that they maintain a certain identity and then they just kind of move and get in and out. This thing has been sitting across the deep south for the better part of a week now, and it's only now starting to sort of inch its way northward. You see the clouds actually stream up the Ohio into Ohio and western PA and on up into the lakes. You swirl around to the other side of that, and there's actually a rather sharp blow up of cloud tops here moving across Minnesota and Iowa. That's where the severe weather risk is tonight. And if you look, this is not the best. This is not a good shot. I'll try to get something better in the means in a little bit. Peter is just beginning to come into the lower right part of the screen, but northwest of there, if you see that cloudiness that's running east west to the north of where Peter would be, that's an upper low that's up at 25,000, 30,000 feet, and that's been responsible for the shearing that is going on. One thing I hate about this time of year, Joe, when you get this, when the ridge stays strong or is too strong, you know, you got a cold front to your west. Behind it is some nice dry air, and you just have to sit there and wait for it, and wait for it, and wait for it,
and wait for it, and wait for it. Yes,
and
know the feeling.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm going to have some more rain to deal with. I've seen very little sun here for the last 3 or 4 days. But for the Northeast, at least, and the Northern Mid-Atlantic states, now comes this sort of gradual transition as the winds go east and then southeast and then south-southeast and then south. So you start to get into those days where low clouds start coming in, eventually maybe some drizzle. Some places burn off, you know, sort of cloudy to partly sunny, kind of a dirtyish sky. I think that's what we're transitioning to in the Northeast and Northern Mid-Atlantic states for not so much for tomorrow, but maybe for Wednesday.
Well, we had a lot of puffy cumulus clouds that developed during the course of the afternoon today. In fact, for some, it actually became, I guess you would use the term, mostly cloudy. I mean, broken cloud cover, but they were fair weather cumulus clouds. And as we headed toward the evening hour and as the sun began to drop lower in the western sky, those clouds began to break up. And now we have, if for anything else, scattered to almost clear skies across much of the tri-state area and giving us all a view of the big, beautiful harvest full moon that we have tonight. This is the moon that is in the calendar closest to the autumnal equinox. The equinox will arrive on Wednesday at a little after 3:30. So this full moon being the closest on the calendar is indeed the harvest moon, even though it's still officially in the summer season. I agree with you, Damar, Joe. We'll start seeing more in the way of cloudiness coming in later in the day tomorrow. And as we get into Wednesday, a shower possibility begins to enter the picture, but the real threat of precipitation probably does not arrive until the front arrives, whenever that may be, Thursday into perhaps part of Friday as well.
All right. And the radar is a little bit on the sloppy side, back through the central Appalachians, down into the Carolinas and Georgia. A few flash flood warnings are up in parts of Tennessee and in northern Alabama. Some showers and storms along the Florida East Coast. Then it kind of crosses inland, northeast, southwest from the central coast down to the southwest corner. In the meantime, let's run up to the Great Lakes where you can see some showers and storms in northern Michigan. And what looks like, I mean, this is a pretty active line here. There's two tornado warnings at work up in northwestern Wisconsin there, Mr. Rayo. That's a pretty nice, maybe that's the wrong word. Let's call it nasty. There's a nasty looking squall line of thunderstorms there that's running across western Wisconsin down into eastern Iowa. A bunch of severe thunderstorm warnings down in the southern part of that line going into Missouri. So that's where the Storm Prediction Center has its risk area for today, for this evening. A slight risk of severe weather that is indicated. And I'm going to just give this a quick refresh, see if they got, they've got two severe thunderstorm watches in play right now. There's a tornado watch up on the northern end, which is already playing out with respect to those tornado warnings that we pointed out. And over the next couple of days, we're looking at no severe weather being indicated for tomorrow, which is a plus, and a marginal risk for severe weather on Wednesday, and that shows up in Ohio, West Virginia, Western PA, Eastern Kentucky. I kind of thought that, at least for this approaching front on Thursday, that Yeah, there's a pretty strong southerly flow ahead of it. So I'm thinking that while there might be a thunderstorm or two embedded in that mix, I think the emphasis is probably going to be more on rain rather than on severe weather in my view for Thursday. I'm not
Well, we get
looking.
southeast winds.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't. Yeah, I usually, southeast wind is not a productive wind when it comes to severe thunderstorms in the coastal, not even just the coastal areas, but even the inland areas of the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states. By the way, everybody saw you get up because I put us back up full screen. Did you have to get something?
I had to get my
Yeah, you had
V8.
to get your V8. Oh, how
Yeah.
lovely. Very
So.
nice. All right, so let's get back to let's go back to the maps. And as we last left you with the Storm Prediction Center, so let's go to WPC. They were really bullish with rainfall, and now they kind of pulled it back a little bit. But still, every bit of 3/4 of an inch to 1.5 inches in some areas and parts of Western New England, down to your house, Joe, and over in Connecticut. And that inch to 1.5 inches runs down into South Carolina, the western part of the Car of North Carolina, Western Virginia, in through a good chunk of Pennsylvania. They're indicating 3 or more inches of rain, and also from eastern Indiana, northwestern half of Ohio, north and east to right along and west of the St. Lawrence River on the Canada side. We're seeing some hefty amounts of rainfall being indicated over the next 7 days. And meanwhile, across the plains and the northwest, very little in the way of precip. But in the southwest, and particularly in California and in Nevada, over the next week, anywhere from 1/4 of an inch to some places as much as 1 inch to 1.25 inches. So oddly enough, a little bit of rain. In the southwestern quarter of the U.S., where oftentimes we can go through long stretches where they don't see a flake or an ice pellet or a raindrop.
They could use it too.
Yes.
They could use that kind of I mean, it's been a deadly, deadly hot and dry summer. And well, is it too little too late? Well, anything at this point would help certainly. And they've got that out across, again, as you pointed out, Joe, most of California, Nevada, and also Arizona, especially the western half of Arizona. These are not I think the season is over now. These are not monsoonal type rains or showers for Arizona or adjacent New Mexico or Nevada. This is more synoptically inclined.
All right. Taking a look at the upper air here, and of course you can see the ridge in the eastern part of the United States, and you've got this rather impressive shortwave trough that's moving through the eastern Dakotas, and that's why we're seeing all the severe weather where we're seeing it tonight in Missouri and Iowa and up in northwestern Wisconsin. Well, that trough is going to be pushing slowly eastward. You see it here as it makes its approach on Wednesday. It looks like it's going to pivot and cut off and lift up where the upper low, Joe, goes from southern Indiana to over to Lake Huron. So here we are Thursday morning, and we still have a southerly flow here. And then instead of moving straight east, and again, I think it has to do with the fact that offshore, at least on the 12Z run, the L I just drew is Peter in one form or another. And you can see there's the Atlantic Ridge is kind of nosing in to coastal northeastern New England there, and I think that's the problem here. If Peter is there, that upper low is going to have a real tough time pushing east. It's going to want to lift northward, and then here comes the next one, which a rather vigorous upper low that drops in over the weekend over the Great Lakes and then swings through the northeast, and then here comes the next one after that, and this one even more vigorous. Dropping those westerlies, if you want to believe it, all the way down into Central Florida. And this would be right around the very end of the month. Now, if this verifies, for the last day or two of the last day or two of September and the first day or two of October. This is going to bring in a rather nice shot of cool air overall into the eastern part of the U.S.
Since I was a little late, we did not have a chance to discuss this off air. Are you going to make any allusion to the map that you sent me last night? The
that
GFS
one?
Ensemble?
Nah. Let's not talk. Let's not go down that particular road. All right. Why, you think I should?
No, please. Actually, I know one other person on Facebook actually displayed that, and I kind of got a chuckle out of it. So,
yeah, well, you know what? It's that anyway. It's that time of year. They're all itching for the first accumulating snowfall.
Right.
Oh, we'll just leave it alone.
But don't you think that?
What?
Don't you think it? This is even earlier than my little episode in 2011.
Well, that's true. But I did, let's not go there. So anyway, this upper, these troughs are kind of hanging in the east. Now, I want to make a general statement here. I want to go to the European. And I was looking at the teleconnections and where, you know, the NAO is going to go pretty strongly negative starting next week and then carrying us into the first days of October. And the European today and the GFS last night really sent a very strong signal. You look at this on the 240 hour, by the time we get to the 240 hour, you have this big blocking high that strengthens over Greenland. That's a pretty powerful looking blocking high. And of course, with that there, it drives a deep trough into the east. And I would just point out that this blocking, and I wrote about this for my subscription folks on my weather platform on Patreon. The link is, by the way, is if you're interested, it's attached to the chat. I wrote about this the evolution of this blocking pattern, and in particular with regards to the tropical wave that is emerging off the African coast and will eventually become. I think is going to probably become at least a tropical storm by the end of the week, and maybe even a hurricane after that. But I always get nervous when I see blocking this time of year that sets a trough up in the eastern part of the United States. I've seen a number of models signal this. And of course, on this particular run, you know, this is where the European sees Sam as a hurricane in about 9 days' time. Now, it may be there, it may not be. A lot's going to depend on what's going on in the Atlantic. If you notice, there's an upper low that's south of Iceland, and there's a trough that extends southward here. Now, at some point, that trough actually even, there's also an upper low that's sitting east of Newfoundland and extends a trough down southward. Now, it's quite possible that any new tropical system could respond to that weakness and recurve before it even gets to 50 or 55 west. But assuming that it doesn't do that and it misses that trough, I think it stands a chance to get along fairly far to the west. And I always get nervous, Joe, when you see a blocking pattern in late September, early October that dives a trough down to the south. This becomes one of those games where, you know, if there's a storm there, I mean, the pattern like this is dandy if you like, you know, cool weather, but it's also a little bit on the dangerous side if the timing with that and any kind of tropical system were to sync up. So that's something that's kind of in the back of my mind. That was my takeaway of looking at the model runs over the last 2 days. If we're going to go into a blocking pattern, we probably need to pay attention to see what this new system coming off the coast does.
Yeah, we'll see. Sam, at this time of the year, the tropical waves that come off of Africa look really robust even before they put their feet in the water, so to speak. Mm. And once they do get wet, once they go over the ocean, they start lighting up or revving up really fast. So, yeah, I would not have any doubt that the the disturbance that may eventually become Sam is going to be one of those potent systems that will move westward, move across the Atlantic Ocean, and all bets are off this far out as to whether or not that trough will be in the right position, whether or not it'll dig far enough south, whether or not it'll serve to either pick up or draw in Sam toward the Atlantic seaboard, or whether or not it might go negative and actually help to boot Sam out to sea and never lay a glove on the Atlantic seaboard, yeah, either of the U.S. or of Canada. We'll see.
Yeah, I agree. I think all those, you know, all those possibilities are there. I wouldn't give it a second of thought if the upper pattern was anything other than a blocking pattern. When you start to see those blocking patterns show up, they can oftentimes create some problems. And I just want to sort of keep my eyes on this. So in the meantime, the issue with the next cold front, and you can see for tomorrow on the GFS, is showery rains in the Carolinas into western Virginia, in the land of Johnny Quest. The cold front is running from eastern Michigan down to just about to St. Louis, and it's crawling eastward. So now you start to see the atmosphere. You see the isobars in New England and down through the Carolinas are suggesting a southeast wind and eventually a south wind. And then here comes this, you know, this narrow band of showers. You start to see them arrive Wednesday evening. And on this run the front kind of just hangs a little bit right near the coast. But for the most part, it's all done by Thursday night. And then we segue over into what looks like a improving weather conditions on Friday, a decent Saturday, and a fairly decent Sunday. And even into early next week, a couple of weak fronts go by in the northern part of the flow. So there's nothing, you know, nothing big here on the horizon.
No. And in fact, the 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day outlook from the Climate Prediction Center calling for near or below normal precipitation and above normal temperatures. So dare I say, a mild and relatively dry weather pattern shaping up as we move on into the end of the weekend and on through much, if not all, of next week. And that's the kind of weather that a lot of the leaf peepers like to look at. I was never really into, you know, forecasting such things as the fall foliage colors. But I would assume, Joe, that with all the rain that we've seen here in the Northeast and now the possibility of some drier air, a protracted spell of dry weather moving in, that may actually bode well for fall colorations, especially across central and northern New England, which we'll get it first. And that probably would be by, what, the early to middle part of October. So if you're into that, if you're into looking at the fall foliage colorations, this may be your year. This may be a good year, again, with all of the wetness that we had up until fairly recently. And now, again, that spell of drier weather, dry conditions, that's expected to last for more than just a few days across much of our part of the country.
All right. I'm pulling up a couple of things. Just want to, the new tropical weather outlook is out. And we have Peter and Rose, we'll get to those in a moment. The system that just moved off the African coast, they've now raised it to a 40% probability of it developing in the next 48 hours and an 80% probability now in the next 5 days. The Hurricane Center says showers and thunderstorms associated with the tropical waves several hundred miles south of the Cabo Verde Islands continues to show signs of organization, although recent satellite wind data indicate the system lacks a surface circulation. Upper-level winds are to become more conducive. Looking at the upper air, which I'll bring up right now, I totally agree with that, with that assessment. Just going back, the low that you see here on the map, this is Rose. Let me just get the paint box up here. So this is Rose, this is Peter, okay? And if you look at the upper air, what we're looking at on this map, it shows wind shear from 5,000 feet up to about 30,000 feet, just kind of an average. And you can get a pretty good idea of what the flow, it also is showing you the flow up at above 25,000 feet. Now take a look at this long, very strong jet that is just to the north of Rose. Now, this was yesterday afternoon's map. And then also take a look here where Peter is. There's this deep upper low sitting northwest of Peter, which is that surface low there. And that's creating, that is what's causing the wind shear that's been impacting that particular system. Now, Rose gets pretty much annihilated by that trough that extends down from the Azores tomorrow and Wednesday. And, you know, there's like a remnant low that you could follow. Peter, on the other hand, is getting ripped apart on the GFS, and you can barely find a representation of that. But take a look down south of there. Now, this is the tropical wave that is moved off, that they're talking about an 80% chance. And look at this whole region here, from the islands all the way back to the African coast. We're looking at a region of very, very low wind shear. And it's a good 600 miles to the north to get into the stronger winds that are occurring up north of 25 north. So it's in a very, very strong, a very, very positive environment that's conducive for strengthening. And that holds on pretty much on its trip across the Atlantic. Now, again, is there a trough somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic here that eventually, you know, one of these things you got to look at, too, is that if it on the 18Z run, it actually strengthens it more than it did on the prior run. So as you get a stronger system, it tends to move more poleward. And this would argue that if there's some troughing out in the middle part of the Atlantic on this particular run, the GFS kind of recurved it before it even got to 50 degrees west. So the prior run did not do that. The prior run kept it weaker and then strengthened it as it got closer to north, once it got north of the Leeward Islands and heading to just east of the Bahamas. So what are we dealing with here? Is there going to be a trough in the middle of the Atlantic? That remains to be seen. But at least we can be pretty certain of the fact that in the development phase here, this system is going to have several days or more of conducive conditions for strengthening. So it wouldn't surprise me, Joe, if this does become a hurricane out there.
Yeah, and the projections are indicating that this system will eventually take a run at maybe the Leeward Islands, maybe near or north of Puerto Rico and Haiti. And then the question is, where would it go from there? And then we have to start dealing with considerations regarding where the positioning of that trough will be along the eastern seaboard. But that, again, is days and days and days
down long the road.
Like 9 and 10 days down the road. Insufficient data for a meaningful answer at this moment in time,
right,
Mr. Dr. Asimov. So,
Peter is at, as of 5 p.m., we're only getting advisories every 6 hours, 20 north, 61.8 west. Looks like it's about good 150 or more miles northeast of the northernmost Leeward Islands. Top winds are 50, moving west-northwest at 14. Now, they have it turning before it gets to 70 and then going northeast, and they do weaken it to a depression, and then they have it strengthening back to a tropical storm on Saturday as it approaches Bermuda. We'll see about that. And as far as Rose is concerned, very, very slow moving north-northwest, 18.4 and 34.4, top winds are 40 miles an hour, moving northwest at 16. And again, once it gets north of 25 degrees north, it's going to run into that very powerful shear zone with strong westerly winds there. And I want to just take a look. Might as well see.
Their climate, Rose's climatological clock is ticking,
yes,
so to speak.
Yes, exactly. And
in fact, I'd even said the Hurricane Center even says Rose running out of time to strengthen.
Yes.
So there you go.
They've been so hung up on disheveled Peter, they forgot about dear Rose.
Exactly. But Peter, but Joe, Peter refuses to succumb to strong wind shear.
Right, exactly. Refuses. Yes. It's just, you know, it's holding it. He's holding.
They're getting more. They're getting more colorful, I must admit, in their descriptions or the descriptive phrases they're using to describe the forecast for these tropical systems. I mean, you would not have seen this in the age of Neil Frank 20 and 30 years ago.
Oh, no.
You would have just simply said, you know, Peter.
Keep it straight. They would have no right. The track model guidance. We're seeing more and more models showing up. They're fairly tightly clustered west and then a west-northwest course, you know, right through the next 5 or 6 days. And some of these models actually go out 7 days and it's still only at 50 degrees west. So we're talking about something that's not going to be moving particularly fast. That's another thing about this time of year, Joe. The push, the trades are starting to weaken. So the push westward is a little tougher. You know, you get them earlier in the season sometimes and they're moving at 15, 20, or like we saw with a couple of storms early in the season, they were moving up at 25 miles an hour or more. You know, this time of year, it's like 15, 14, 12, even 10. And the intensity guidance, which is early in the game, but we have a few of these models taking it up to a Cat 1 or Cat 2 by the time we get to 96 hours. So just early looks here as far as that particular system is concerned.
Yep. Yes.
Yes. Now I'm going to get Briller Jeopardy up on the board here. Hang on one second. Let's see.
Meanwhile, on the chat board, I forgot. I think it was Chuck Cardillo who said that on Friday, he saw a fireball meteor and actually heard a noise shortly after he saw it, which may indicate that perhaps the meteor was a bit on the large size and may even have actually have come down somewhere nearby. If he was able to actually hear a sound or rumble, if you will, but they're very exciting to see. Every once in a while, we have one of these larger erratic particles from space, and they don't have to be very large. I mean, you could have one, let's say, a few hundred pounds, maybe the size of a football, that comes rolling on through the atmosphere and lights up the sky as bright as a full moon. I don't know how bright the fireball was that Chuck described, but I mean, they're very exciting to see, and even more exciting if you happen to hear a noise in the aftermath. Of course, don't forget that back in Siberia, February, I think, of 2015, there was an object that was so large that the noise it made after it streaked across the sky actually broke a lot of windows. And that's not very good to have your windows suddenly break in the middle of depth of winter in Siberia. You want to get it fixed really fast before the night comes on, because it can get awfully cold in Siberia in February. Doesn't it? No big deal.
A little brisk.
Not a big deal, but
a little
brisk.
It's
not as tragic if it happens in July or August, but if your window breaks in January or February, if you don't get it fixed mucho quicko, you're going to have a problem by later that night.
Yeah, I would think, or even during the day. Okay, so the chairman, Scott Briller, submitted his Briller Jeopardy for tonight. I'm thinking he's doing his COVID run, so stay safe, Mr. Scott. And here we go. So you ready?
I am all set. What is the category tonight?
Well, we're back to some weather. This is a weather category. And
no Three Stooges.
No. So the first... The first event, now, you might be able to figure some of this out. It's a little hard. So the last time this weather event occurred was on May 20th, 2013.
Well, we had a derecho. May 20th, 2013?
Yeah. And by the way, we're not talking about... Locally, this could be anywhere in the U.S. So the last time this weather event occurred was in May 20th, 2013.
All right. Well, then so this couldn't have happened locally.
No.
Or could it? Would it be possible for it to be local?
No.
Have we ever had? No.
Okay, so by all now right. You've gotten the two no's. So by now, Arlene Francis would be now asking the questions. So, okay.
Well, let's see. Right. So if we've never had one up here, and it's not really possible, as you just said, to have one up here, then it must be something akin to a severe thunderstorm, or maybe an outbreak of tornado activity.
You're getting warmer.
I'm getting warmer.
Yes.
I think I'll pass and give it to Bennett Cerf.
Right, please.
No. All right. So if I'm getting warm, tornado. Right. We discussed this fairly recently about it, like down in Philadelphia and South Jersey having an EF2 or EF3, and we said that's probably as high up on the scale in this part of the country that you can get. So. So how about if on 2013, I'm just trying to remember, did we have have we seen an EF4 or dare I say an EF5?
You can dare say it an EF5. Yes, that is correct.
An EF5?
An EF5. All right, that was the last time we saw an EF5, and that was
in Texas,
right next door in Oklahoma. An F5.
Oklahoma. Wow.
Okay. How many F5s, tornadoes, have hit Florida within three for credit?
Well, I would have to, on record, this is the old, you know, the.
Right.
Florida. I wouldn't think they've had that many because Florida's a peninsula. They're surrounded by water. I wouldn't think, I would say, yeah, an EF3 is possible where they are, and maybe an EF4, an EF5. I wouldn't say they had too many. I would say, at most, I'd say maybe three.
Well, since you're within three, you're okay. You've hit
six?
It. No, it's zero. They've never had an EF5.
They've never had an EF5.
It was a trick question.
The very fact that. It's a trick question, yes. Yeah. Well, I asked the question, is it possible that Florida can have an EF5? EF4, yeah, maybe. EF5?
Well, they've never had an EF5. Anyway. Okay, what is the furthest east state to have an EF5?
I would... How about Arkansas?
No, I'm surprised you didn't get this, Joe. Xenia, Ohio.
Zanesville?
No, remember
Xenia.
Remember
Xenia, about Xenia. That's right. That's right. In 1974.
Right.
Xenia, Ohio. I didn't realize that was an EF5, though. It did wipe Xenia off the map. But if you're a tiny little town, you don't need an EF5 to get wiped off.
Right. No, but I believe that was an F5, but I may be wrong. All right. Back to local weather for you. What is the record for most consecutive days with measurable precipitation at Le Parc des Centrales? Within three.
I think that extends from July 31st to August like 11th or 12th. I'll say 12, plus or minus one.
And 12 would be exactly correct. And can you, since you were so quick in getting that, can you get the year?
That was fairly recently, I think. It was in 2013 or 2014. Within the last 10 or 12 years.
Actually, it was 2003.
2003.
Okay.
Okay.
What is the Central Park record for most consecutive days without precipitation within five?
Oh, that's tougher. It's a lot easier to get days that are wet than a string of days that are dry.
But we didn't have storms back in the in the day, but we had long stretches where it was sunny every day and you didn't see anything.
And I'll say 10.
Actually, it's a pretty long stretch, 36 days, October in November into November 1924, 36 consecutive days without a drop.
With no precipitation? With right. No precipitation?
That's what it says.
Wow. Wow.
And here's the bonus question.
Oh, whoa.
The bonus question is, from 1950 to 2021, so that's 71 years, how many EF5 tornadoes has the United States had? And you can guess within 10.
Well, 1, 2, I'll say 6.
From 1950 to 2021 in the United States?
Well, we just mentioned how unusual the phenomena is to begin with.
Right. Well, they're actually
How many? I mean, we have to. That's 71 years.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that we've had 71 EF5s.
No.
35, 30, half of that. 35. No, that still seems to like too many. And you're saying that 6 is gonna. So if what's between 6 and 35? How about 20?
Actually, there have been 58.
58?
That's what he says.
58?
And by the way, John Charles on the chat board says that an F5 tornado was in Niles, Ohio in 1985.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe they're not as they're not as unusual as we said or we thought.
Right. Well,
it's,
you know,
it's pretty amazing. But then again, we haven't had one, as you just pointed out, for a good number of years anyway.
That right.
Wouldn't seem to fit the 50 some odd, you know, for the last 70 some odd years average.
Exactly.
Wow, that's something.
Yep. Okay, so I'm talked out. I got to catch up on my sleep from last night because I really did not sleep well.
Well, we both have sleep to catch up on. I didn't really fall fully asleep until just before 4 in the morning, but. So hopefully I'll have a nice.
I always think, nice, you know, I think it's the worst feeling in the world is when you're dead tired and you go to sleep and you can't fall asleep. I think that is, you know, that's worthy enough to make you want to cry when you feel like that.
You know, on the internet, there's a Bob Ross channel. Bob Ross is the guy who does those paintings in 30 minutes. With the happy little trees voice. His voice could literally put you, it puts me down within 5 or 10 minutes. And when I discovered this and I have one of those smart TVs, I said, this is wonderful. The problem is that after about 15 minutes, they break in. This is a PBS show, but they need to sponsor it. So after 15 minutes, they break in with 2 minutes of commercials. So if I fall asleep to Bob Ross, I'll immediately get woken up again by, you know, a loud commercial like, hey, how are you? You know, I've got what? Whoa, wait. and then I need Bob Ross to come back to put me back to sleep again. So, but if you've always had, if any had trouble falling asleep, you know, go to YouTube and watch Bob Ross and he'll put you to sleep really fast. And he knew it too. He said he used to get letters from people. They never painted with him. They never were interested in his paintings. They just wanted his voice to lull them to sleep.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's whatever
that's
works.
My suggestion tonight. Yes.
All right. Let's call it a night. Back tomorrow at the usual shopping time, 7:30 Eastern.
Indeed. We'll be here.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for being here tonight. Everybody on the chat board. We got 50 likes, which was nice. And we'll see you tomorrow. Night, everybody.
Night, night.